There are some writers, when you see the name on the cover of a new book, you know that you're definitely going to have an intriguing and entertaining read. When I mention titles like The Death of Mrs. Westaway, where a tarot card reader employs her particular conning skills to claim a cash bounty on the south coast of England, or The Woman in Cabin 10, which takes us on a luxury liner to the fjords of Norway and murder most foul, or The It Girl, set in the dreaming spires of Oxford, you'll know exactly who I mean, the thriller writer Ruth Ware. Her latest thriller called One Perfect Couple is set on an island off the coast of Indonesia, which is the location for a reality TV show where five couples compete for the top prize, which is not so much cash as notoriety. And as we heard in our Inside Hollywood feature earlier, the force of nature takes a hand. But as a fan of Agatha Christie since childhood, Ruth's narrative is not just as straightforward as that, and violent death cannot be far away. Ruth Ware joins me now. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, it does seem like a perfect summer read, but if you're on an island and a storm is looming, you might not be that happy.
I know, right? Yeah, this did occur to me that this might be the flaw in my marketing plan. It's funny because I was lucky enough to go on holiday to the Maldives as I was kind of coming towards the end of writing this. And maybe because I was in the middle of writing about, you know, disastrous things happening on small luxurious islands, I spent the whole holiday kind of, you know, nervously trying to figure out where the desalination plant was and what would happen if the, you know, the supply plane didn't arrive. So I hope I don't infect everyone else with my paranoia.
Now let's talk about the two parallel themes, I suppose. One is reality television, and I'm not sure if you're a fan. I suspect you're not a real fan of things like Love Island, because the island we're talking about is not like Love Island.
I guess so. I am and I'm not. Like everybody else, I got completely obsessed with Traitors when it first came out. And I think partly because it's quite crimey, you know, it's all about how far would you go to get what you want? Who would you deceive? Who's playing who? All of which is basically the subject of my crime novels. But I hadn't watched a ton of reality TV since kind of the original Big Brother series came out, which I guess was like, gosh, I was way back in kind of year 2000 or something. So I had this kind of big reality TV gap in my knowledge. And then I was talking to a friend about a crime writing friend, the writer Gillian McAllister, about Traitors and, you know, saying it's a miracle more of those shows don't end up in murder. And she said kind of flippantly, sounds like a Ruth Ware novel. And I didn't really think anything of it at the time. But when I sat down to write what became One Perfect Couple, I thought that does sound like one of my novels. And maybe this would be a really great theme to explore. But because I hadn't sort of watched any reality or much reality TV in the interim, I sort of had to go back and kind of watch those shows almost like homework in a kind of anthropological way, which was absolutely fascinating.
One of the things that comes across in your description of this particular fictional reality TV program is the cynicism of those who organise them.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is not true of all reality TV show programs. Some of them are super responsible. But I do think we're seeing more and more kind of pushback from ex-contestants. There's been a lot of newspaper pieces and biographies about former reality TV show stars, kind of really saying how vulnerable they felt, in some cases, how betrayed they felt by the producers, you know, the way that they were sort of encouraged to play into certain narratives. And sometimes I think you can see that pretty clearly on screen as a viewer. You can see the way certain people are being sort of set up as the show's villains, or, you know, the girl next door, or the kind of the lovable hunk, or whatever the role is supposed to be. And it must be fascinating. I have never been on a reality TV show, but I did speak to a few people who had. And I think it must be really interesting to sort of, as a contestant, to kind of know how much you're expected to sort of play into that. But at the same time, be aware that when you come out of it, there's going to be maybe hundreds of thousands of people for whom that is, that's you. That's the reality of who they've constructed for you. And that must be an extraordinarily strange experience when you know that perhaps that's not you or only a tiny part of you. So, yeah, I was quite uncomfortable about the extent to which it is a manufactured reality and the extent to which we, the viewers, go along with that.
And we all know which scenes are going to be box office. I mean, if you've got someone who's eating a live crab or something like that, which happens from time to time, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, they eat all sorts of things. But those kind of scenes with the grimacing of the participant, they're the box office things. They're the money shots.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the more kind of relationship-based ones, it's very much, yeah, who is going to have the cat fight? You know, who's going to have the meltdown? Who's going to be the diva of the show and the villain of the show? And you're right. Yeah, you can almost see those set pieces unfolding in front of the camera and imagine the sort of producers thinking, right, you know, cha-ching, this is the one that's going in the trailer. And it is, it's a very sort of weird, because, you know, the name reality TV, these shows are purporting to be about the truth. But in actual fact, it's a very constructed, artificial version of reality. It's not reality, really. And I suppose that, you know, that's partly what my books are about. It's how much can you believe the evidence of your eyes? How much can you believe the person that you're talking to? And in this case, you know, how much can Lila trust not just the producers, but her fellow contestants? So, yeah, truth, lies and deception were all very much at the front of my mind as I was writing this.
Now, you've got five couples, and we use that term loosely. Some may be more coupled than others, which will emerge in the reading of the book. But all of them, or at least one half of almost all the couples, have a very specific agenda in agreeing to do the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was one of the things that I really noticed, you know, when the first reality TV show I watched was the original series of Big Brother, and the people, it was kind of billed very much as a social experiment. You know, these were regular, ordinary people from incredibly diverse walks of life. You had, you know, someone who was an ex-nun, you had like a builder, you had, I think, a teacher. It was just really interesting people that you might find, I don't know, you know, sitting on a tube train or on a bus or, you know, in the supermarket. And that is not the case for most reality TV shows these days. Increasingly, they are existing reality TV celebrities, you know, people who are kind of on the circuit, or they are people who want to become famous. They're going on the show not to win within the kind of the sort of structure of the show itself, but to win a much larger game, which is, you know, public popularity, increasing your Instagram following or whatever it is. And so I was really interested in exploring the tension between those two kind of populations. And because of the structure of the show that I had kind of come up with in my imagination for this, for the book, it's a couples TV show. You know, you have to go on it as an existing real life couple. As you say, some of them are more established or successful than others. But you're supposed to go on it as a real life couple and sort of have your relationship tested in the kind of white hot gaze of reality TV, as the show's producers would put it. But the fun thing about that was that I thought it was very plausible that in many cases it would be one half of the couple who was driving this, one half of the couple who was the actor or the Instagrammer or whatever it was, and the other half who was sort of slightly reluctantly dragged along to kind of, you know, to fulfill their role as a good partner, but not necessarily an incredibly enthusiastic TV participant.
Now your protagonist, Lila, is the ordinary person, described, and I'm going to be polite here, as next door girl beddable.
Yes. The producer in the book uses a cruder term. Yeah, she's a scientist in real life and has absolutely no desire to go on this show, but her partner really wants to do it and she wants to be a good girlfriend. And her sort of personal nightmare is being filmed, you know, jogging down the beach in a bikini, but she, you know, she wants to be a supportive girlfriend. So she says yes. And so, yeah, she finds she's very much the kind of fish out of water character, which is always a fun one to write. And it enables you to, as a writer, to sort of ask all of the questions that you think the reader might be asking, because Lila doesn't quite understand everything that's going on. She's sort of trying to figure out all of these weird dynamics, and having her be from that completely different world was a fun way to do it.
Yeah. Now, the villain of the piece, in addition to any of the producers who might be characterised as villains, the villain of the piece is this massive storm. We don't want to give too much away so people can enjoy the novel, the thriller, to its acme. So tell me about the storm and its influence in the events that follow.
Well, I suppose a lot of my novels are really about how awful human beings can be to each other, but secondly, how much, you know, how powerless we are in the face of larger events. And this book ends up being very much about that. So the contestants are awful to each other, as are some of the producers. But yes, halfway through, or maybe a bit less, sort of third of the way through the book, there is this enormous storm that comes not quite out of nowhere. It is forecast and just wrecks the island. And I think having traveled to one of these small islands myself, one of the things that struck me was how incredibly fragile the infrastructure is. You know, there is no fresh water. You're basically on a tiny little blob of sand in the middle of the ocean. All food has to be brought in. There's often palm trees on the island, but they usually remove the coconuts for safety reasons, because if they hit you on the head, you will die. You do suddenly realize how fragile we are as human beings, how ill-equipped we are to survive in what look like incredibly luxurious settings, but are actually very, very hostile when it comes down to it. And yes, so this storm sweeps in, the sea completely scours out the shape of the island, it rearranges the sand, it destroys the desalination plant, it wrecks the solar panels which are supplying electricity to the island. And my characters suddenly feel very, very small and fragile in the face of what nature can do to you.
And then human complications set in. But we won't go any further into those, because they are the essence of the thrills in the book.
Thank you. I've just been saying it all goes a bit Lord of the Flies is my shorthand for it.
Well, it's a terrific read, a great summer read. Your descriptions of the storms are terrifying. I mean, I've found myself in the wrong gender, in Lila's shoes, as she copes with the rigors of living on a storm-torn island. And I really found myself appropriately terrified and really enjoyed it.
I would say I'm sorry, but I'm not. I'm very glad.
That's exactly what your intent was. Anyway, it's a great read. It's called One Perfect Couple. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and its author, Ruth Ware. Ruth, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.